Tonight's talk is on wise effort. That's the sixth part of the Eightfold Path. And with it, we begin practicing with the practice section of the path. So in this practice section, there is wise effort, wise meditation, and wise concentration. But it also incorporates, in fact, every part of the path incorporates all the rest of it. As we go into this practice area, we need to remember what we've covered so far. In the wisdom section, which includes wise understanding and intention, we learned that dukkha is caused by clinging and that it can be ended. And we formed that intention to end dukkha for ourselves and others. We practiced even more with wise intention when we got into the ethics section and applied what we've learned to cause less dukkha for all beings in our speech, action, and livelihood, which opens up to include everything we do. Those 3 months of practice with ethics advanced our involvement with the path from an intellectual exercise to our daily behavior, making the Dharma an active part of our lives. Now, at this point, after doing all of that practice and incorporating it into our daily lives, we kind of get it. Now, we begin to train our minds where the cause of dukkha has its roots. Having a deeper understanding of what dukkha is and how it plays out in the world, many of us have yearned to change our own mental habits that started with week one of wise understanding. We've all come to see that how we act is determined by how we think and feel. And I've spent the last 5 months saying frequently, we're getting there. And now we're here. I want to remind you, the course is for practicing. And actually, the Eightfold Path, while you can understand it, you need to practice it. It's especially important in this section. And with wise effort, this might be the best chance you get to learn how to use wise effort and free yourself from suffering. So I urge you to work with the practice guidelines that are on the table. And they're also on our website on the page for this course, 2018-19 Eightfold Path. In last week's Dharma Talk for Alameda Sangha, I gave an overview of the three parts of practice: mindfulness, concentration, effort, and how they have to work together. I did that so that I wouldn't have to take time tonight to do that, because wise effort by itself deserves all of the time it can get. During last week's talk, I labeled mental states as either wholesome or unwholesome. It's kind of an old-fashioned word, but wholesome leads toward liberation, unwholesome toward more dukkha. For many people, including myself, it works better to call them skillful or unskillful. That highlights the fact that everything in our awareness is a process. When we use adverbs rather than adjectives, which describe nouns. Thoughts and feelings, no matter how habitual they may be, are really more verbs than nouns. Other ways to qualify them are helpful versus harmful. And yes, mind states can be neutral. For tonight, though, taking a binary approach highlights what we want to do with our attention. We want to move the needle from harmful to helpful. Attention is really the only force we have to guide our mental processes. Mental habits are like sub-programs. They're powerful and they save energy and time, but they can have flaws in them that produce unwanted results. Habits just bypass our attention, so we need to use mindfulness and concentration to bring our habits into our awareness where we can reprogram them. There are several ways that we're made aware of the existence of unwholesome or harmful mental habits. We can notice the effects that they have in our lives when we act on them, often unconsciously. Or it may take other people pointing them out, and sometimes that can be pretty painful. But even that only tells us what actions we're doing that these people have noticed. It often leaves us unaware of the mental states that are the causes and conditions of our actions. That's why it's so valuable to understand that the path is about dukkha, an internal experience, and actively do something to reduce it. Our practice with ethics has taught us how to behave. And now we begin to make all of our actions, mental as well as physical, free from dukkha. In our daily meditation practice, we use mindfulness and concentration to explore the terrain of our inner world. We hang out there for 5 minutes a day or 30 minutes or an hour, whatever time we have available every day. We set the time that we're going to meditate, and we meditate that long every day, getting to know what happens in the mind. There's an invaluable ability we can develop to identify when mental events, thoughts, impulses, feelings, are leading to dukkha. All mental activity carries feeling tones that are pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And I'll talk about this a bit more next month when we cover wise mindfulness. For now, we need to understand that if a thought or emotion that arises in meditation causes us to have a pleasant physical feeling, then that feeling can grow into desire, if it's not there already. Unpleasant feelings can grow into aversion. Having the ability to notice the feeling tone of our mental activity lets us spot our otherwise unconscious impulses and their mental causes and conditions. This is our security system that's ringing the alarm on dukkha before it causes more harm. Once we discern or recognize a mental habit that involves some form of clinging, then we can use wise effort to curb that habit. Generally, the thoughts that we're thinking that are really sticky during meditation have dukkha in them. Now, there are four instructions in wise effort, summarized by Thich Nhat Hanh as, water the flowers and not the weeds. People are usually most eager to deal with the weeds, the mind states that cause them suffering. And wise effort starts with these. We can avoid unskillful mental activities by staying away from what causes them or triggers them. And we can abandon or end harmful thoughts and feelings that we're already having. I'll talk more about these ways of dealing with harmful mind states a little bit later. It's also very important to cultivate wholesome, helpful mental activity, like feelings of friendliness, kindness, generosity, patience, gratitude, etc., etc. Got a whole list on the back of the practice guides for the week of harmful, helpful states of mind. We can arouse or bring into our awareness intentionally helpful states of mind, if only in the form of the phrases that we're using to develop metta or loving kindness. Those phrases by themselves incline the mind toward these feelings and intentions. As we practice this way, we may actually feel the warm and positive state of mind arise. Then we want to sustain it, make it last. Whenever some positive or helpful mental activity is going on, we can give it the energy of our attention so it continues longer. That's what watering the flowers is. I do this on my daily walk around the neighborhood. When I see any being that triggers a positive feeling, I try to savor and nurture that feeling. Acting on it reinforces it even more powerfully. Although, of course, I want to use discretion so that I don't end up bothering that person or animal. But I do spend a lot of time on my walks petting other people's pets. Now, these four tasks, avoiding and abandoning the unskillful, arousing and sustaining the skillful, all take some exertion, of course. This usual meaning of the word effort is part of wise effort. We need to burn some of the myriad calories that our brain uses in order to direct our attention wisely. This is what we do to achieve mindfulness, getting control of where our attention goes. We did it at the beginning of tonight's sitting. Many a new meditator gives up because this can be difficult when you've never tried it before. I mean, imagine going through your life with this totally untamed mind, and now you want to go into it. Either people are trying too hard or not enough, or they really don't understand at all what they're supposed to be doing. So we need to find the right amount of exertion. As Ajahn Sumedho puts it, don't strain and don't lose track. To find the right balance of exertion, we just have to get the feel of it. I can't explain it to you. Think of when you learn how to ride a bicycle. You first get on and it's wobbly and you pump those pedals and the bike is going back and forth, side to side, and you jerk the handlebar around trying to stay upright. When you ease up a little on these movements, they start to come together. And then it's just a pretty smooth motion with your legs to keep cycling. At some point, it just feels like you've got the effort balanced. And you need to trust that. So let's revisit in more detail a couple parts of watering the flowers and not the weeds, starting with ending those troublesome thoughts and feelings. Bhikkhu Bodhi discusses these in terms of the five hindrances, but what people actually tell me about are a much wider variety of thoughts and other mental activities, including emotions. There are many ways to abandon unskillful thoughts. Some ways take more skill than others for different people. In the hundreds of interviews that I've had with beginners and more advanced students, most report that it's easiest to put their attention on something else, usually something that carries a positive feeling, like metta or joy. So that's what I usually talk about in my meditation guidance. Tonight, though, there's time to cover more options, and I'm going to take that time. There's a fun little sutta called The Removal of Distracting Thoughts, which is number 20 in the Majjhima Nikaya. It has a great array of similes, metaphors, and analogies. It first recommends substitution method I just mentioned, and it compares it to a carpenter trying to remove a faulty plug with a good one, just pounding the good one in there. Sometimes this method uses the opposite mind state, like substituting love for ill will. Or you can just use anything wholesome that's easy to summon and can knock out that faulty mind state. The second method in the sutta is to consciously recognize the thoughts as undesirable and examine the danger in them, saying to yourself, I know you're going to say exactly this, these thoughts are unwholesome, they are reprehensible, they result in suffering. But you've got the idea. It's what you want to say to yourself. This in the sutta is compared to a beautiful young person, fond of fine clothes and ornaments, who has the carcass of some animal hung around their neck. They would find that totally repulsive and reprehensible. If thinking about how harmful or disgusting the thoughts are doesn't eradicate them, then the next suggestion is to not give them any more attention. Just let them go. A lot of people try this as their first approach and often fail and feel frustrated. Bhikkhu Bodhi suggests this technique is effective against those thoughts we notice as they're just arising. But if you're immersed in the thought, and this is the third approach you try after the soothing mind states and the carcass around your neck, then maybe your mind has been softened up a little bit, and now it will work for you to give it just this little bit more effort. I like the fourth suggestion in the sutta because it looks at how your mind got into this in the first place. Trace back to what led to the current train of thought. And what preceded that one? And then the one before that, until the trail ends and your mind is still. This way, you learn a lot about the layers of assumptions, values, and attitudes that lead to troublesome thoughts. And I'm definitely an advocate for looking at what lies beneath our thoughts and digging ever deeper. If you're working on this and you're on a roll, keep going. Then in the fifth section, the sutta sums up these methods that I've talked about already and ends with an image that I find unforgettable. It says when a monk gives attention to something wholesome, or when he examines the danger in those thoughts, or when he tries to forget them, or when he gives attention to stilling the preceding thoughts, if he's tried all those methods and is still stuck to those thoughts, then, and I quote, with his teeth clenched and his tongue pressed against the roof of his mouth, he beats down, constrains, and crushes mind with mind. And then, any such evil, unwholesome thoughts are abandoned in him, and his mind becomes steadied internally, quieted, brought to singleness and concentrated. He will think whatever thought he wishes to think, and he will not think any thought that he does not wish to think. And in the way that suttas often end, it then says, that monk is now fully enlightened. So that's what it takes. The tongue on the roof of your mouth. You know, that's what it takes. Not always with your jaws clenched, but looking at the thoughts, getting control. Another approach is similar to the carcass around the neck method, and that's to consider the kind of person this undesirable thought is leading you to become. You may remember that in the month we spent on wise action, we examined our own sense of integrity. Knowing that thoughts influence action and determine who we become in the future, do we really want to be entertaining this unskillful thought now? Does this thought fit with our sense of integrity? This is like the teaching on hiri, an innate sense of shame or self-respect, or otapa, a dread of consequences or respect for the opinions of wise people. The Buddha called these aspects of our sense of integrity the bright guardians of the world, because they keep people generally from falling into chaos and violence. Probably the most beneficial technique for ending unskillful thoughts is to turn them into specimens to dissect. Investigate them. Instead of letting them run your mind, pull them out and pin them down so that you can look at them and, more importantly, observe how they make you feel. So apply your mindfulness and your concentration. Is your belly or any other muscles tense? Is your face scrunched up, your jaw or hands clenched? Do you feel hot or cold? Directly experience the dukkha caused by these thoughts as it impacts your body. Get your attention out of the story and into the body and keep it on those sensations of dukkha until they become quiet and fade away. Do not return to the thoughts that caused those feelings during this process. So, at this point, you may have thought the same as the question I'm often asked, which is, can't we just go back to concentrating on the breath? The answer is yes, absolutely. That is a great technique, and for a lot of people, when they're not very attached to the thought, it works quite well. But a lot of thoughts are sticky. I've known people whose minds have been thinking tormenting thoughts repeatedly for decades. These mental habits may take all of the methods I've covered and possibly more. To remind yourself what these techniques are, you can always refer to the text of this Dharma talk, which will be on the Sangha's website on the Eightfold Path Course page. Before I go, and I know some of you are getting a little tired, I want to say just a little more about cultivating helpful states of mind. We can do this either in meditation or in daily life, whatever works best for you. I've found real life very effective for developing the Brahma Viharas, metta, compassion, joy, and equanimity, especially, you know, working for years with people who are dying, suffering from addiction, or incarcerated. And for sympathetic joy, I conduct weddings. There are simpler, everyday opportunities to practice being kind or generous or patient or whatever mind state you want to develop. Their benefit is inherent in them. They contain a pleasure that doesn't have any sour aftertaste, but just makes us happy. When they become strong and arise easily, they are powerful protection against harmful mental habits. And they give us the strength and clarity to see through those habits and uproot them. I'm sure at this point you see that just knowing what wise effort is will do no one much good without actually practicing with it. This is true of all of the Eightfold Path. It must be lived to lead us to liberation. So, the handouts are there with the weekly practice guides next to the Dana Bowl, and they're also going to be available on our website after tomorrow. I wish you all the very best in your practice always. Thank you.